Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, I'm Mark King, and welcome to a special edition of News Desk, the Guardian's daily news podcast. Coming up on the programme, we'll be telling you all about the Guardian's Catena project, our three-year development scheme to improve the well-being of the people living in a village in rural Uganda. We'll explain where your donations go, how the aid works, and how lives are being changed right now. We'll hear from some of the people in the village and learn more about the specific problems facing Uganda. And we'll find out exactly how they'll be celebrating Christmas. This is News Desk from Guardian Unlimited. Hello again, thanks for joining us. I'm Mark King, editor of the Guardian's Catena website. With me in the studio today is the Guardian's award-winning staff photographer, Dan Chung. We'll be hearing more from him and his experiences in Catena throughout the podcast. First, though, let's begin, I guess logically enough, at the beginning. Back in October, The Guardian launched a development programme to improve the lives of the 25,000 inhabitants of Katine. It's a village district in one of the poorest parts of rural Uganda. It's a joint partnership between The Guardian, Barclays Bank and AMREF. That's the African Medical and Research Foundation. The project's due to last 3 years and we're hoping to raise £1.5 million to boost the sanitation, education, healthcare and social and physical infrastructure of the area. Here's the editor of The Guardian, Alan Rusbridger, explaining his thinking behind the scheme.
Well, I had an idea that a newspaper could do something in the aid area that was original, that would involve the community of readers, the readers, the users of the web, and that could act as a bridge between those readers and a community in Africa. And I was particularly trying to find a way of doing something that kept this subject alive. Everyone talks about charity fatigue, aid fatigue. I think you get reader fatigue with subjects like this. And I was trying to find a new way of bringing readers and users on the web very close to the subject and to keep their attention if we can do it for a long time, for the next 2 or 3 years. It would have been a much less interesting project 10 years ago before The Guardian had an all-singing-dancing website, because then we were in the era when newspapers just pushed the news out and it was a very one-way thing. And so very much the aim is to get readers involved. I mean, really, we want to create a virtual village of Katine on the web so that people can follow the storylines of individual villages, of individual projects to do with health, medicine, education, water, whatever it is, and see how the thing is developing as we go along. It's a huge shock coming here because there's virtually nothing in terms of material goods. There is no electricity. The sources of water are few and far between. Food is hard to come by. I mean, life is a real daily struggle, and people are living hand-to-mouth. Basic medicines aren't here. And there is something 14th century about some of these societies. This is an area that has been hit by war, by pestilence, by plague. It's a pretty desperate state. There's no question we can make a huge difference. I think the big challenge is to make a difference that will last. It would be a relatively simple matter to build more buildings, to improve the fabric of the school, to get textbooks. We're hoping it will be a simple matter to get electricity and better access to water. It would be wonderful if there was a model here that involved the web and twinning. It didn't have to be just about a newspaper, so that if there were towns or schools or villages that, instead of twinning with villages in Belgium, could get involved in projects like this, then you're doing something, you're creating a model for something which can work for other people. What we're doing is not about throwing money at the problem. Everyone recognises that that's not a brilliant idea, but there is a different idea of aid that is from the ground up and is more sustainable, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Alan Rusbridger there being accompanied by an instrument called an adungu. Now, at the time of podding, we've raised £249,000 towards our year one target of £700,000. And thanks very much for all your pledges so far. Right, moving on. We've got the Guardian photographer Dan Chung in the studio now. Alan Rusbridger touched on the conditions in the village in that piece we just heard, Dan. And you've been to Katina a couple of times since we started this project. Can you tell us about your first impressions?
Well, I was struck by just how basic everything is. They really don't have access to everything that you take for granted here. I was kind of expecting that, but what I didn't expect was to find people who were, despite all of that, really resilient, proud. They had humour, there were laughs and smiles. And to be able to do all that, despite the way in which they are living, I just find amazing.
Were the people welcoming to you when you arrived?
Incredibly welcoming. The first time we drove up into the village, there were children running up after the car, waving. Men and women were stopping, doing whatever they were doing to see what we were doing. And they were very welcoming. Everybody was very open. And despite the fact that there was a strange Chinese guy with his camera wandering around, they didn't seem to mind. They, if anything, wanted to open up their lives to us to show what their predicament was, but in a way that I just don't think you'd get here.
Dan, tell us about some of the places you visited, because you have been to the Tariri Health Centre, which is within the Katina sub-county. What was that like?
The health centre itself is surprisingly well equipped. The only problem is they have absolutely no electricity to run any of the equipment that they've been bought. There's a full operating theatre that has the beds. They have, you know, plenty of surgical equipment, but no power to use it. And not only that, the doctor who's supposed to attend the centre very rarely, if ever, turns up. I met him and photographed him once. It's just that when you need him, when any of the patients in the health centre need him, he's just not there.
So who looks after the health centre in his absence?
There's a man called Samuel Agom. He's the clinical officer. He basically has administrative duties at the health centre, but in the doctor's absence, he seems to be running the place. He supervises the matrons. He orders in the drugs that are required, but quite often there aren't enough drugs. One of the most amazing things that I saw when I was there was a woman actually giving birth outside of the health centre on the concrete, not because there weren't rooms in the health centre, but because the only person to attend her when her waters broke was one matron who wasn't strong enough to lift her into the centre herself. So she gave birth there and then. Now, I'm sure that's not something you see every day in London or in England, but apparently quite a regular occurrence in Katina.
Let's talk about the village itself for a little while, because it's not a classic village in the sense that we understand in the UK. It's quite disparate, and certainly the houses are quite interesting to look at. Can you describe that, Dan?
So the village is actually a series of built-up areas spread along a long, long red dusty road. There's a trading centre, there's an administrative centre where the local government offices are and the police station, and then further down again there'd be schools, and then another smaller trading centre. And then people actually live not along the road, but off the road, back several hundred metres perhaps into the trees, into the bushes, and you'll find small hamlets of two or three little shacks where individual families or two families might live.
And they live without electricity or sanitation, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. Katina's been cut off now for several years from the electricity grid of Uganda, actually since the LRA incursions, the troubles they had a few years ago. The wires were cut, melted down and sold, and they haven't been replaced since.
And what's interesting to me when I was there is that the road activity, if you like, there's lots of people walking up and down the side of the road, and it's sometimes children or women carrying water canisters, and there's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, some of the funniest things you'll see in Katina happen on that road. We went to market several times, and people carry absolutely everything on the back of bicycles or on their heads. We've seen very large pigs strapped to the back of bicycles, goats. Chickens, not just one or two, but 20 or 30 chickens perhaps hanging off one bicycle. And then on people's heads, you'll see very large water pots. You'll see a 70-year-old woman we saw one day who had a tree on her head, as it turns out. I don't know many 70-year-olds here who walk around with trees on their head, but again, it seems reasonably common in Katina for that sort of behaviour.
Well, you can see a lot of those images in Dan's videos and others made by the Guardian Films team at guardian.co.uk/Katina/video. Now, central to any development programme is the role of education. The Observer's Anushka Asthana has just come back from a trip to Katina, where she spent time at one of the local schools. Here's how she got on.
Morricot Primary is a community school set up by parents who wanted education for their children. They built the classrooms themselves. 6 mud and thatch huts in one row. 1 classroom for each year. The teachers do not have A-levels and are not paid for their time.
What is the formula of getting an area of a square? Area is equal to a side plus what? A side.
I am Achal Daniel. I am a teacher in primary 6, mathematics teacher. I don't have any training. I become a mathematics teacher because when I was in primary, I used to pair the skills which a teacher used to teach us. Then I became a mathematics teacher, and I like it very much. The class is doing well in mathematics. Now I have 7 of them, pass 8, and then a first grade. One is having division 1, and then there is division 2. I'm now 3 years teaching this school. Starting from P1, I was there, then P3, P4, then I come up to P6 now.
My name is Ochen Julius, teacher of P5. I teach science and English. I've not gone to any institution for a course, but I'm working privately. I learned it from my O-level. Yes, because I discussed it with my colleagues in the class. So I can be able now to teach using that knowledge. I like more training in order for me to earn something which is good and then to continue teaching other young children.
School starts at 7:30 a.m. and ends at 4:30 p.m. for the 364 children enrolled, though only 274 habitually turn up. The children have no playing field and 1 textbook for each subject in each year. All are borrowed from government schools. Mathematics and science are popular among the students.
My name is Asapu Grace. I am in primary 5. I like science too much. I want to become a nurse, helping the community by treating them.
My name is Shaggy Vicente. So I like mathematics very well. I like my teacher, so that he teach me very well. After studies, I would like to become a driver.
Without teaching materials, learning by rote is at the centre of the school. Ask what they need, the staff say, teachers' guidebooks in every subject, as well as dictionaries and the right textbooks to deliver Uganda's national primary curriculum.
Now, when it comes to aid and development in Africa, a British-based newspaper can't really claim to have expertise in the region. That's why The Guardian got involved with AMREF, the leading health development organisation in the continent. As with much of Africa, infections of AIDS and HIV and malaria are high in Uganda, while life expectancy is low. Currently, it stands at 47 years old. Here's Joshua Charlo, country director of AMREF in Uganda, to explain more.
AMREF is the largest and the biggest health development organization in Africa. It's been working in Africa for the last 50 years, trying to improve the health of people in rural areas of Africa. In Uganda, we've been working for the last 25 years. Uganda has got a population of 28 million people, and Katene, which is located in the eastern part of Uganda, a district called Soroti, is one of the poorest areas of the country. Every 3 seconds a child dies in Africa as a result of malaria. Katene is no exception in that respect. AMREF and Guardian and Barclays Bank believe that the future of sustainable development in Africa rests with communities. And the core of this project is partnering with communities, empowering communities, building their skills, training community structures, for example, to manage health, to manage schools, to manage their own water systems. And we're hoping that in the next 3 years, those structures will be strong enough to sustain the initiatives that will have begun together in the longer term.
Joshua Charlo. You can read more about AMREF on the Katine website or at amref.org. Dan, let's come back to you. Joshua was talking there about health, and you, of course, have been photographing many of the health professionals in Katine, but they don't all work in using Western traditional methods, do they?
No, in fact, traditional medicine is very popular in Katine, as in non-Western medicine. I met a woman called Sister Josephine, who's a traditional birth attendant. Now, she may look like a normal matron. In fact, she has a blue uniform and a white apron and latex gloves, and she gives birth to children. But the difference is that she was taught by her ancestors how to do this instead of practicing the Western medicine at the health centre.
And can you describe the interior of the place she works, which is basically a hut, isn't it? It's quite surprising inside there.
Yes, I mean, it is surprising that people actually choose to go to a small, dark, dingy hut with a not very functioning malaria net instead of actually to the health centre. But it's the way things have been done for generations, and I think a lot of the women of Katine are much more comfortable doing that.
Let's move on to water quickly, Dan, because some of your most striking images have been people either carrying water or attempting to extract water from the boreholes. What's your impressions of the way in which people struggle to get clean water in Katine?
Well, I mean, it's terrible, really. There are really not many clean water sources, and most of the inhabitants tend to use very poor or at least average water sources that have microbes, worms in them. There was one particular well that I visited that had actually been flooded with the recent floods, and people were still using it. So the flood water was actually pouring into the top of the well hole, and the water that they were fetching out was actually mixed. And you can imagine that's really not very good for you. I mean, there are so many people who do suffer from terrible diseases as a result of poor water quality. You know, people get diarrhea, that have amoebic dysentery. And it's things that are preventable. And just by giving a small amount of money to the project, we'll be able to fix all of that, put in new boreholes, fix up and protect the existing boreholes and the existing wells to stop things like that happening.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? Sometimes the only access to safe water is so far away that people cannot walk those distances.
Well, yes and no. Obviously, getting clean water is a priority, and all the villagers want clean water. It's, in fact, their number one priority if you ask them. That's what they want. But the distances they go, well, actually, it's not such a bad thing a lot of the times. A lot of women, and it is women who do the work getting the water, actually like the trip to the well because it's the only time they get to chat to each other, and it's very much a part of the social fabric of the place. So distance, not necessarily the worst thing in the world, but clean water, an absolute priority, yes.
Our other partner in the Katine project is Barclays Bank. Barclays has had a strong and, yes, often controversial presence in Africa for a number of years. But what will the bank specifically bring to our development project? Time for that Adungu again.
I'm Rachel Barber. I'm head of global community investment at Barclays. I found it a really fascinating trip to see all of the things that need to be done in Katine, particularly around the health and the education agenda. But I think also for me working for Barclays, I see all of the opportunities where we can provide support in terms of economic development, particularly around issues like microfinance and financial management skills in the community. And having seen the need in that community, which in so many locations is there's a lot of need there, I think we can do a lot to try to make a difference and have an impact as a partnership. One of the things that struck us is that there's actually very little cash circulating in the community in Katine, and that's quite a challenge for the individuals that live there, particularly when they need to pay for things like drugs and they need to pay for the education of their children. And one of the roles that Barclays can play is actually to support increasing the cash levels in the economy. And that's particularly around encouraging people to set up businesses and supporting them in doing that. We can do that in part through microfinance, but I think what's also important is we're intending for our people to come in and volunteer in the community to teach people about how to run a business. One of the things that we saw at Katine Market was that only 35% of the people who are trading in Katine Market actually come from Katine. So when you've got traders who are coming from outside, they're taking all of the cash straight out of the economy. And what it's important for us to try to do is encourage more of those traders to come from Katine, help them set up the businesses to trade in the community so the cash stays in the community.
Barclays' Rachel Barber. Dan, let's come back to you again. You've seen Katine on Market Day. Can you describe it to us?
Well, Market Day is one of the major social events of the week. Thousands of people come to the market bringing every single kind of ware you can imagine. There are goats, there are sheep, there are chickens, there are fish, But not only that, you can buy small battery-powered radios. You can get your plastic tub fixed if it's broken by a man who will actually stitch a piece of rubber from a shoe onto it just so you can make it work again. And that's cheaper than buying a new one.
Can you tell us a bit about the guy who brings the car battery to the market? Why does he do that and what's it for?
Well, there's no actual day-to-day source of power in Katini. So the car batteries is essential. They use them to run a small cinema in the market area, which actually is just a television running a repeat of a Jackie Chan movie. But that's the closest thing they've got. And there's also a barber who uses it to power his electric shaver. And then on top of that, because there's no power and because there are no phone lines, you need to charge your mobile phone. So people will bring their mobile phone up to a small battery and plug it in, and that will have to then do them for the rest of the week.
We've just put a video of that on the website, actually, Dan. But coming back to the market itself, what are villagers actually bringing to the market? What are they buying and selling?
Lots of everyday household items and foodstuffs. And clothing, lots of clothing. You get mounds of second-hand clothes, presumably brought in from the West, which are then sold reasonably cheaply by vendors. The only problem is that a lot of these vendors actually come from outside of Katini. They're not locals. They've driven from the nearby town or city. And so when that money is spent, it then goes out of the community.
OK, Dan, thanks very much for joining us. Now, without getting too Live Aid about things, you'll be listening to this podcast on or around Christmas Eve. Uganda's a predominantly Christian country, so what's life like in Katine at this time of year? Well, we can speak now to Job Opolot. Job's one of two Ugandan journalists found for us by Panos Eastern Africa. That's an NGO that specialises in creating greater media visibility for the poor and the marginalised. He'll be working full-time on the Katine project for The Guardian. Job, you're in the area now. How will the Katine villagers be spending Christmas?
Oh, Katine villagers will be spending Christmas in a quiet environment because, considering what Katine has gone through, it was an area that was hit by the LRA insurgency in 2003. As people were coming out of that insurgency, we recently again had floods here in neighboring villages in Katine, and most of the people moved out of their homes, but since the floods receded, they are getting back home, and they are so enthusiastic that we believe they will be having a quiet and peaceful Christmas. Normally here, what people do is, on a Christmas day, they will definitely go out for prayers, that is in different churches. Then they will come back, relax at home, have lunch, and obviously, as a traditional African setting, they will definitely have parties. That is, they will have dances, they will have drinks. You know, generally, it's a happy, merry-making season for them this way.
And will they be exchanging presents or gifts of any kind?
Oh, yeah, definitely they will have exchange visits. Here, what happens is people group themselves together, and they have a communal arrangement, a home-to-home visit, where they will begin with a party in one particular home. The next day they move to another home, and that one pushes them even up to October next year.
So you're going to be partying and drinking quite a lot too?
Yes, they will be drinking the local alcohol they make. They will be drinking beers. There are beers here that people normally take, which are a bit cheap. They will be drinking some hard gins. They are local gins called waraji.
What do you think 2008 holds in store for Katine and the villagers?
Well, considering what I said earlier about the floods, particularly, there is going to be a food shortage here because the floods washed away, washed away the food here, and the gardens are quite devastated and devastating. So people here will welcome 2008 as a new year, but then there are things that are tied, things like lack of food. Although optimistically they will be looking at the other things like life, they will be looking at security, they will be looking at generally anything that will appeal to them is what they are really waiting for.
Okay, that's it from this special edition of News Desk. As we've been saying throughout, to get involved with the Katine project and donate, head to guardian.co.uk/Katine. There's also some fantastic videos and slideshows for you to look at. some audio testimonies to listen to, an interactive map of the village, as well as articles and blogs for you to read over this Christmas week. There's new material going up on the site every week, so please do keep visiting and be a part of what we're doing in Katine. I'm Mark King. Thanks for listening.
Guardian Unlimited.